Welcome to Sleep Health on the Restonic Sleep Channel, The Power of Sleep. I'm Dr. Alison Bentley from the Restonic Essentia Sleep Clinic. And today we're going to be talking about sleep and studying. It's getting close to the end of the year, so we're sitting in October, and a lot of people are going to be studying for exams, either at school or at university, and have a conflict because there's only a certain number of hours in the day. And how much should we be spending studying and how much should we be spending sleeping? And often what happens is that sleep gets compromised and we'd rather study than sleep and hope that everything works out in the end, because the feeling is that the more time we spend on actually looking at our books, actually reading through the information, writing out the information, that is the most important part of the studying period. And it is. There's no question. You need to put those hours in. If you don't put the hours in studying, it's unlikely you're going to do well in exams. But it's really also important to understand how sleep is involved in that studying period and how there is a level of compromise that you can do, but there's a level of compromise that now starts compromising your marks, that you are going to do worse in exams if you compromise your sleep to a certain point. So let's unpack that. It's a bit of a process to kind of go through. Let's understand that when you wake up in the morning, you have done all the preparation you need to do for that day in your sleep. You can't prepare for one day, the day before, because you are literally spending. So the easy way to think about it is like a credit card, that when you wake up in the morning, you start spending. And if you don't sleep the whole day, you spend the whole day. You are spending on that credit card. And when you go to sleep that night, the way to make sure that you're going to fall asleep easily is you need to have maxed out that credit card. So I think you remember maybe in the older movies when credit cards first came out, that there would be these dramatic scenes in shops where people would pull up the credit card and cut it into four pieces by saying, you have maxed this out. You cannot spend any more money on this card. And that's where you need to be when you go to bed at night, so that the brain is maxed out. It has done everything it needs to do. And when you sleep at night, you pay off that credit card. And it is really important, unlike your current credit cards, I'm sure most people are like this, I refuse to believe that most people pay off their credit card every month down to zero and start at zero at the beginning of the month again. It is really important, though, for sleep that you pay that credit card off completely and that you start the next morning not in any debt. And what we mean by debt is no sleep debt, so that you're not waking up sleepy, that you have slept as much as you need to sleep and you can start spending again. So the credit card of sleep is like that. You spend during the day and you pay it off at night. So when you pay it off at night, you're ready the next day to start spending. If you don't pay it enough, and that can be from two things, it can be from not having enough hours of sleep, or it can be that the quality of your sleep is poor. So even though you've slept 7 hours, you might wake up feeling tired. If you haven't had enough hours, you're going to wake up tired. That feeling tired is what we call the sleep debt. And you're already starting basically 3 hours into the day before you start spending on your day. And so at the end of that night, you're likely to feel even more tired and even more maxed out. And the time of being maxed out will happen earlier. So if you're normally maxed out at 11 o'clock at night, now you might be maxed out at 9 o'clock at night and you have to go to bed earlier. In fact, your function between 9 and 11 o'clock is very poor. So that's what sleep's about. Sleep is the only prep you can do for the day, and you need to do it properly and you need to do it every night. So you can catch up on sleep. I'm not even pretending that that's not possible to do, but it is really important to not think that you could cut out 2 hours of sleep every night for the week and then try and catch up on the weekend. 5 nights of a weekday, you are now 10 hours short of sleep. And whether you actually need to catch up 10 hours of sleep or whether you can, your sleep becomes more efficient is a problem that we're not sure we have solved. But you can see immediately that it's almost impossible to have an extra 10 hours of sleep in 2 days of the weekend. And so you may be compromised even when you start the next week. So it's really important when we look at this to not compromise your sleep too much. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to catch up. So how does that interfere with studying? How does that interfere with learning? Sleep, again, as we've said, what it does is put your brain in the best condition to actually learn, to actually gather new information, to be able to problem solve, to be able to put things together, integrate information in, which might not be important in primary school, but it's really important at university that that's what you can do. Many exams are problem solving exams, and you're going to get into that exam and you may be compromised if you haven't slept enough. It's also really important to understand what the relationship is between sleep and memory formation. Now, there's lots of information come out about how sleep is involved in memory. It can be really confusing. I'm going to try and make it quite simple. And in that simplification, I'm going to lose some stuff. So please, if you see information, you go, well, you shouldn't talk about that. Yes, that's because I'm trying to make it more simple. There are books written about how memory and sleep are coordinated together. But let's drill it down into three different components of memory formation, therefore learning. So remember, that's what learning is about, memory formation. The first phase of memory formation is that you have to put the information into the computer. The computer being your brain, you have got to put the information in. If you don't ever look at your biology book, you are never going to remember anything about biology. You have got to put the information in. And different people have different ways of doing that. Some people can just read. I had to write. I have had screeds of writing that I was doing when I was learning. I have to write. I have to summarize. I have to integrate. That's how I have to learn. But you have to go through the work. So that's point one. Phase one, you have to put the information in. The second phase is you need to turn that from being a short-term memory into a long-term memory, a longer-term memory. Now, short-term memory can be of two types. There's short-term memory that I've done something and I remember it a couple of hours later. There's working memory, which we are using in our heads all the time. So working memory is best explained by you being in the bathroom and kind of going, I need to get this from the kitchen. And you get to the kitchen and you go, I have no idea why I'm here because I've forgotten. It's been such a short period, but I've forgotten always. Now, that working memory and short-term memory, it's super easy to get distracted. So between the bathroom and the kitchen, if you were going there and you go, oh, I also need to remember to do this and I also need to remember to do that. By the time you get to the kitchen, you've lost that other memory because you've had these other two thoughts. So that's what kind of working memory, short-term memory are about. And it's super easy to get distracted. So you do need to be able to get it in properly and make sure it's in. But turning that almost ethereal kind of thinking into memory, that happens when you're asleep. And we've known since 1928 was one of the first studies that was done and going, is sleep important for memory? So it's a study that would never be done now because it was only done on two people. But what they showed in 1928 is if you learned something and then you had a 30-minute nap or you stayed awake for 30 minutes thinking about it, and then we tested how much you remembered about 2 hours later, you always remembered more if you had that 30-minute nap. So most people would think that that 30-minute nap was a waste because you could be thinking about it and continuing to think about that particular problem that you just learned. But it turns out that actually 30 minutes of sleep is better for long-term memory than it is than staying awake. So that's, you know, that's nearly 100 years ago. We knew that sleeping on a problem was always better. And we've known that. I mean, there is a phrase that says, if you have a problem, sleep on it. You're likely to come up with the solution. So, and that goes back hundreds of years. So we've known that that's an issue, but now we know a lot more about it. We know that during sleep is when you're going to consolidate your memories. That's phase two. I'm going to talk a little bit more about each of these phases. Phase three is then the recall, and that you do when you're awake. And that is you sitting there trying to remember what you learnt. And can you pull it out of those memory banks? Now, you can only pull it out of the memory banks if you put it in the first place and if it was consolidated into the memory. Okay, so those are the three phases. Two of them happen when you're awake and one of them only happens when you're asleep. And that is why we consider sleep so important for children, adolescents, high school pupils, that they have to sleep well because that is actually where you learn and remember stuff. So, putting information in, as I've mentioned, there are various ways of doing that. There are people listen. I can't learn by listening. I can only learn by seeing. And there are visual learners and auditory learners. As I said, there's reading, there's writing. There are different ways of getting the information in, but you do have to put the information in. And most people would go, well, that's not related to sleep at all, is it? Well, have you tried to do that when you're tired? Have you tried to do that when you haven't had enough sleep? We know that your executive functions, your ability to concentrate, your ability to focus, your memory is all compromised by not sleeping well. So if you are sitting there and if you've had a good night's sleep and you wake up feeling refreshed, your ability to sit there and focus and actually get through the work is much better than if you've had a poor night's sleep. Now you're struggling. You're slower and it's going to take you a lot longer to get the same information in as opposed to having a good night's sleep. So it's a trade-off always. You've got this many hours. How many hours do you spend on sleep and how many hours do you spend on actually trying to learn and actually getting the information in? And it's a trade-off, but there is a point, there's a flexion point where now you are not getting enough sleep. And so all of this concentration and focus has been compromised. So find out where, and I'm not saying you shouldn't cut your sleep short a little bit, but don't eliminate your sleep. Don't cut it down so short that you are now battling to even concentrate during the day. Now that's a waste because you are not able to actually get the information in efficiently. And that's would be better. It would be better to have that extra hour of sleep. Then the whole day's function is better. Important to understand, 1 hour extra sleep improves your function the entire day. So please don't compromise your sleep. You need to be able to focus. You need to be able to concentrate. Then what about the kind of sleep? Now, it's very complicated here because of various things. There are different types of sleep. So there is light sleep. There is deep sleep and there is REM sleep. All of you who have Fitbits or Garmins or any of those kind of sleep trackers will know that they will tell you how much light sleep you have, how much deep sleep, how much REM sleep. Where are you going to compromise your sleep is when your deep sleep and your REM sleep are no longer 20% of the night. The light sleep is not the important bit. It just fills in the gaps between the deep sleep and the REM sleep. But if your REM sleep is starting to drop below 20% of the night, or more importantly, your deep sleep is starting to drop below 20% of the night, you have reached that flexion point and now you are compromising your sleep and probably compromising your daytime function. So if you have one of those trackers, watch that tracker and make sure that the sleep you're getting is still good enough for you to be able to focus and concentrate the next day. So we have different types of sleep. Then add to that, we have different types of memory. So what we're talking about now is studying, and that is just putting information into your memory banks. But there's muscle memory. There's, you know, learning to drive. When you first learn to drive, it's super complicated. There's the clutch and the accelerator and indicators and mirrors and all of that kind of stuff. But after a little while, it all becomes automatic. And that's called muscle memory, that we do things without thinking about it. And that's a type of memory. And that also occurs during sleep. So that also gets packed away and put into your memory. And that includes playing the piano, dancing, karate, any of those kind of things where you need to learn automatic movements, which make life a whole lot easier. That happens in sleep as well. But it doesn't happen in the same kind of sleep as studying does. So they happen in different types of sleep. They also may happen in different types of the brain. So part of the muscle memory is in the cerebellum, which is at the back of the brain, which is very much involved in movement, and studying happens in other parts of the brain. So there are different types of the brain involved. There's different types of sleep. There's different types of memories. So it's complicated. So I'm not even going to go into which one happens where, because what we want much more is for you to have a comprehensive good sleep, that you have both deep sleep and you have REM sleep, and then your brain can do what it needs to do in the different parts of the brain, in the different types of memory. It can get all of that done. So we want to focus on having a good night's sleep rather than just picking on particular things. You certainly cannot get into a situation and go, okay, so for studying, I don't need REM sleep, so I can compromise my REM sleep and just have deep sleep. No, that's not how this works. REM sleep is probably involved in studying, but just not as simple as we think it is. So I don't want you to pick on particular things and only do that kind of thing. But we do know, obviously, and we bring up the issue again, that if you have sleep problems, such as sleep apnea or leg movements that are occurring during the night, that are reducing the amount of deep sleep that you have, your memory for that particular type of sleep is going to be compromised. You can have enough REM sleep, but REM sleep can be so disrupted and in so many little pieces that it may not be able to do the function that REM sleep is designed to do. So, and that's what happens with apnea. It happens with leg movements. basically, if you're getting enough sleep, but you're still waking up tired, any kind of studying that you try to do is going to be compromised. Again, I focus on if you're having a sleep problem at night, please get some assistance with that. Try and get it sorted. Try and get it treated. Learning becomes much easier if your sleep is better. Basically, if you don't have enough sleep or you have a poor quality sleep, it is likely that your memory formation and that ability to hardwire your memories into your brain is likely to be compromised. It is important. And then, so then you have a recall during the day. Now, the recall, let's look at this in some numbers. Let's say that you are not sleeping well. And because you're not sleeping well, you can only get 50% of the information that you need to get in. You can only get 50% into your brain. Then if you are not sleeping well, and that's part of the reason why you're not functioning well, let's say you have cut your sleep short because you think that that's the way to actually get to be able to study harder. You've cut your sleep short. So you can't do all them. You cannot consolidate all of that into the memory. So you only do 50% of it during the night. So you only put 50% in. And of that 50%, you only consolidate 50% because you've cut your sleep short. Can you understand you only have 25% to recall of the original material? And that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to compromise your sleep so much that you cannot put all of the information in. And then when you sleep, you cannot consolidate it all because you now have less to recall. So when you get into the exam, you don't have all of the information hardwired in your brain to be able to pull out for the exam. That doesn't make any sense at all. So please be careful how much you compromise your sleep. It's not going to work well. Then let's look at people will often ask then look, say to me, when should we study? Is there a best time of day to study? And the answer is yes, but it's different for different people. So I went through the whole of medical school with people saying to me, you really should get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and studying in the morning. And I would try that. You know, I'd wake up at 4 and then I'd have to have an alarm for 4:05 and 4:10 and 4:15. I cannot wake up early in the morning. It is just not my nature. I can study till 2 o'clock in the morning. So if I start studying at 9, I can study till 2 o'clock in the morning, sleep till 7, and I'm good, right? But I cannot. I am not an early morning person. My youngest daughter is an early morning person. And so on the weekends when she was still staying at home, I would wake up at 7. When I woke up at 7 in the morning, she would have already got up at 5, been to the gym for an hour, come back, made a smoothie, had a shower, et cetera, et cetera. She's like, I got a whole day. And I'd just woken up. And so she could get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and study. I can't. You need to know you and where you best study. And it's pretty easy. If you're sitting there and you're up at night and you're going 10 o'clock at night, let's study because I'm wide awake. Let's do that. And by the way, that is most young people. Most young people are what we call night owls and are able to stay up late at night and prefer to sleep in the morning. If that's where you're most awake, then that makes sense for you to study then because you're awake, right? It doesn't make sense to try to fit into somebody else's study schedule, wake up early in the morning when you feel awful. That doesn't make sense to try and study there. So study at the right time. You're either a night owl or you're a lark, and that is somebody who wakes up early in the morning, or you're somewhere in between. If you're somewhere in between, study a couple of hours before you go to bed, wake up a little bit earlier and study an hour or so before you go to varsity or school in the morning. But find the right time for you to study, because it's going to make studying a whole lot easier. It's not going to make it more pleasant. Nothing can make studying more pleasant, but it is going to make it easier for you to study. Now, you do kind of get in a situation of compromise where you may find that the stress of exams and the anxiety that you have about exams, that starts to compromise your sleep. So we've spoken about voluntarily depriving yourself of sleep. That's one thing. But when you get a situation that you are so anxious about the exam or so anxious about your sleep that that now compromises your sleep and you're unable to sleep before the exam, and you kind of go, what should I do about that? How do I manage that? How do I get enough sleep the night before an exam so that I can go into the exam well-rested, thinking clearly, thinking innovatively, being able to solve problems, able to think laterally, and in the best condition to get the best marks in that exam? How do I do that? So if you can get enough sleep voluntarily, you need to sleep that night before the exam. You need to sleep properly. But what do you do if you can't? So the temptation would be to take sleeping tablets or to do something to try and help you fall asleep. Be very careful about what you take to help you to sleep while you are studying. So you certainly can take natural remedies. So things, you know, that you can get over the counter at the chemist, you can take natural remedies. They don't seem to compromise memory formation, but for many of them, particularly over-the-counter sleeping tablets, we don't know. So we don't have data on those tablets to say, do they compromise memory? We have some tablets, we have some information about the sleeping tablets, so the full sleeping tablets. Now, the number one seller sleeping tablet in the world is Zolpidem. We do have some information about that one. That one particularly seems to compromise memory formation at night. So if you're going to take a sleeping tablet at night, so the data we have is that that particular sleeping tablet, if you take it before you go to sleep, can reduce your memory formation by up to 50%. So it can decrease the amount of information by 50%, by half, the information that's going to be put into the hardwiring. So be very careful about using it while you are studying. You may find that you're having to study material much more over and over and over again. And the problem is not that the information going in. The problem is that you're taking sleeping tablets at night to sleep, and that's what's compromising the memory formation. So it's tricky because I can't tell you that there is something that is perfect that will not compromise memory formation, because the antihistamines, for example, which are often the over-the-counter sleeping tablets, the study just hasn't been done. So I can't tell you that it doesn't compromise. What I'm saying is be careful that you don't go for a sleeping tablet, which is actually making your studying harder, not better. So in conclusion, learning is actually all about sleep. That sleep is where you are going to consolidate your memories so that you can recall them when you're in the exam. So if you are studying, going into a studying period, make sure that you get good sleep. Make sure that you wake up well rested. The trade-off is not worth it. By having less sleep, you are going to take longer to study during the day. If you are well slept, you're going to study more efficiently during the day. So it is better to be well slept. Use naps all the time. So sometimes it makes sense to study for 2 hours or 2.5 hours and have a 30-minute nap. If you are somebody who can have a 30-minute nap, it's almost like you are studying and banking and studying and banking and studying and banking. And that makes a whole lot of sense. So as a strategy, that makes sense because you have banked that 2 hours of studying and then you can move on to something else. So that makes sense to do that. But use naps, use sleep, make sure that your long sleep period is as much as you need to feel refreshed the next day. You're probably going to study better that way. If you are battling to sleep, be careful what you use. It may be that you do need to take a tablet. And look, I understand there are people who are so anxious the night before an exam that they don't sleep at all. And then they are very compromised the next day. If you're in that situation, then just having a sleeping tablet that night, that is not going to eliminate all of the information that you have already banked, but it may compromise what you have tried to cram the night before. So it may compromise. But you may find that by taking a sleeping tablet, and that includes Zolpidem, the night before an exam, that because you can sleep, you can think clearly during the exam, and so your function is actually much, much better. But it's a trade-off. So just make sure you don't have too much of trade-off going the other way and that you're taking too many of these tablets and compromising the learning that you're doing going into the exam, whereas there are some people who do need to take a sleeping tablet before the exam. Otherwise, they are completely compromised during the exam the next day. So be careful about the trade-off between time spent sleeping and time spent studying. Make sure that you've made a good trade-off if you do made a trade-off. And if for any of you who are listening to this podcast who are going into an exam period, I wish you all the best in the exams and I hope that you pass, do well, and please sleep properly during the exams. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.